Oral History, interview with Dr. Marguerite Bonin, Director, Griffith Artworks. Would it be correct, Marguerite, to say that the Griffith Artworks, of which you are director, grew out of the Queensland Film and Drama Centre?
Yes, Patience. Griffith Artworks was a name that was invented, really, by the Vice-Chancellor and the then acting director of Griffith Artworks in 1987 while I was away for a year. After deciding that there needed to be a name change because the name Queensland Film and Drama Centre no longer accurately reflected what the organisation was doing.
You wouldn't have been here at Griffith when the Film and Drama Centre began, I suppose.
No, the Film and Drama Centre began in 1975. Uh-huh. And it was the idea of Professor Val Presley and the Vice-Chancellor John Willett talked together about the notion of having arts and arts services in the university, even though the university wasn't formally teaching the arts at that time. Mm-hmm. John Willett had been particularly interested in having another school in addition to the schools in the university at the time. How many were there then? Five?
Four. Started with four.
One of the other schools that he imagined and really wanted was a school of creative arts, and he wasn't able to get the funding bodies to accept that at the time, and so he thought that an interesting way of paving the way to have such having such a school in the future would be to set up an informal arts activity or a series of informal arts activities in the university. And he and Val Presley came up with two separate ideas for how they might do that. One of them was to establish what they called the Queensland Film and Drama Centre, and that was to be a series of artist studios where artists would interact informally with staff and students in the university and indicate the links between arts practice and arts research and academic research, scientific research, and show really the areas of commonality between the two, because they felt that arts and artists weren't generally understood by people who were studying other areas, and that it was important for people, whether they be science students or environmental science students or Asian studies students, that they should have some contact with the arts.
Yes.
And the other idea that they had at the same time and established at the same time was what was then called a Works of Art Committee, and an understanding that a percentage of the university's funds that related to buildings would be set aside to buy works of art to go in the buildings and on the site, indoor and outdoor works of art. The reason it was called the Queensland Film and Drama Centre was that when they had this idea for a series of studios, they then went out looking for money, because they weren't able to fund it through government funds. Mm-hmm. And they found someone who's since been called the anonymous donor, and the anonymous donor's name is on file in the university.
But still anonymous.
I won't name it
now.
They wished to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. It was a husband and wife who were graziers and who'd lost their daughter tragically when she was in her early 20s. And she was studying to become an actress, and she wanted to be a film actress, and they had a particular vision that they'd set something up in memorial to her, and they asked for it to include the name Queensland because they wanted it to have a wider application than just a university application, and they wanted it to include film and drama in its activities. And the first two residencies that the Queensland Film and Drama Centre had in 1976 were in film and in drama. Mm. So that original donation paid for a small building, and then the activities thereafter were funded by a range of government grants.
Where was the building?
The building is still there, and it's now the printmaking workshop just below the cinema and behind University House down in the bush. And it's a small demountable, and it contains a lithography workshop and an etching workshop and a small dark room.
Oh, that's great. There used to be something underneath the what they used to call the Clubs and Societies building, didn't
the,
they?
The Clubs and Societies building, well, the history of that was that in 1979, after what had been the Australian Environmental Sciences Temporary Laboratory, after that became vacant as a result of Australian Environmental Sciences getting their own building, that building was up for grabs, and a lot of areas of the university bid for it, and we bid for it to create more workshops for the arts, and that's what the Vice-Chancellor decided to do with it at that time. So that was called the Clubs and Societies building, but most of it was Griffith Artworks, or Queensland Film and Drama Centre studios.
And it was downstairs largely?
It was downstairs and upstairs.
Both, yes. Right.
Upstairs was a video studio, a screen printing workshop, a fabric printing workshop, and a dark room. And downstairs was the offices and ceramics workshop, and a kiln out in the bush behind the building.
Oh, how fascinating. When you then received this anonymous donation, that was when you built the building, or...?
Yes, this was, of course, before my time. Yes. I didn't come here until late 1978, but they built the building during 1976, so it was operational in 1976.
And the they moved out then out of the
original... No, sorry, the building that they built in 1976 was the original one.
Uh-huh.
And then that building was retained and still exists, but it was expanded to cover the second building as well, which became vacant and came into use in 1978.
But that isn't behind the cinema.
No, what's behind the cinema was the original building that was built in 1976.
Oh, I see.
And the Clubs and Societies building, which subsequently became called the Griffith Artworks building, was between Australian Environmental Sciences and Humanities.
Yes. And that's the one I first knew.
Yes, and that's was demolished last year to make way for a new microelectronic engineering building.
Yes, yes, that's right. When were you first associated with the centre?
I came to work at the centre on the 1st of November 1978. I'll never forget it.
You were a graduate of University of Queensland?
I was a graduate of the University of Queensland. In fact, I was still working on my PhD, I finished my PhD in the year after I came to work at Griffith. So I remember fondly all the help I had from Griffith colleagues in that first year I was finishing off. And I had been working part-time in the arts on a range of projects before I got that job.
It was a very forward-looking concept, the Film and Drama Centre, wasn't it? It was being particularly a community access creative arts workshop. Could you explain how it operated with the community?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to explain where the concept came from. Mm-hmm. Professor Presley, who was very interested in community involvement in the arts, had been to the creative arts workshop shops at Sydney University, which were called the Tin Sheds. And Sydney University, of course, is in an inner city suburb, and so it had a very natural kind of interaction with the community. But he felt that it might be possible to do something like that here, and John Willett was very interested in the idea as well, and they had all kinds of fantasies about how they might do it, including setting up caravans about the place where artists would work. And, of course, they weren't allowed to do that. But what they hoped would happen is that they would always have at least one artist working in a studio, and that that artist would make contact with staff and students, and through those staff and students, the wider community, both the arts community and the non-arts community, and that people would be welcomed onto the university campus to work with the artists on artistic projects, and that the artists would also work with people who weren't arts students. And indeed, the first projects that took place involved students from non-arts areas as well as the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, one of the early projects was taken on by the Faculty of Humanities, the then Division of Humanities, as part of their formal coursework for their first and second year students, and students were allowed to provide assignments in the form of sculptures and videos and paintings.
Hmm.
That didn't last long.
What was your position actually in those days when you first joined the
I think I was called coordinator. I don't actually remember what I was called at the beginning because it was just a job that was advertised as a clerk.
Oh, I see.
It's a bit like the story that Jim Chong told the other day about the way the university recruited people. And
won't ask the same questions.
More or less. I do remember being told that they were looking for a $7,000 person, and they wanted me to be able to go on television and radio and promote the university on things like the 7:30 report, and they wanted me to be able to raise millions of dollars, and they wanted me to have wide contacts in all areas of the arts because it was a multi-arts thing. So it was, again, like Jim's story, that they wanted the earth.
For $7,000?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Were the workshops open they were open to Griffith students, but they were open also to members of the public. Everyone paid for the right to participate?
In the early days, there was no payment.
Those
were the days when it hadn't really occurred to people to charge a fee for service for those kinds of things. Universities were, and particularly this university, I think, was very generous with its facilities.
Just come along and take part.
Professor Willett really believed that universities held valuable resources in trust for the community and that they should share those resources, and this is one of the ways he saw of doing it. At the same time as he established these Griffith artworks and the Works of Art collection, he also established a cultural coordinating committee for this general area of Brisbane. In those days, there were a series of cultural coordinating committees around Queensland mm-hmm. that were funded by the Queensland government. And he established one of those with its base at Griffith University, and he provided his own administrative assistant as its secretary. And
was this Val Rowley?
Yeah. Okay. And they all the meetings were held here, and the secretarial support and the catering happened from this campus. And that went on for a number of years. Mm. And that cultural coordinating committee, I don't remember the exact boundaries of it, but I know it went south as far as Logan City.
Mm.
So,
and it drew people from there.
It drew people to talk about cultural development in the community mm-hmm. in those areas.
Mm.
And people organised arts activities off the campus. So it wasn't until... We held our first formal teaching workshops in 1979, and we didn't charge for those either, and we didn't charge anyone to access the studios. And after...
They paid for materials, I suppose.
They paid for materials, yes. After some experience with that for about 18 months, I decided that it would work better if we charged people, and indeed it did. And so we developed a formal program of teaching workshops, which grew to be a very large program. Till this year, we've got about 45 workshops that run on weekends and evenings.
45?
Yes.
Great.
And that's been funded over the last, well, since 1980, funded by the Queensland government and a series of sponsors. So we've charged for those, and we've also, since 1980, charged membership. And membership entitles people to have access to the studios, but they also then pay a fee, which varies from studio to studio, which covers some materials and administrative costs.
Mm-hmm. What was the scope? What were the different... areas of arts and crafts that were programmed for workshops?
I'll make a distinction between the studios, which are our facilities, and the workshops, which is what we call our informal public teaching
yes.
program.
Uh-huh.
The first studios that were established in video and film, and that was, again, because of the way it was structured at the outset with the money from the anonymous donor.
Mm-hmm.
And video and film and photography. And this was very typical of Griffith University, that it was very forward-thinking in those days mm. about the sorts of things that the arts might include. And even these days, some people have trouble seeing photography and film as part of the fine arts. There then followed a printmaking studio, which was there when I arrived, and that was set up in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
The next studio was another printmaking studio, and it was for poster making and screen printing.
Mm-hmm.
And that came about as a result of a particular passion of Professor Presley's for political posters, and his interest in experimenting with how students and the wider community would respond to political posters. And he'd actually tried an experiment in the late 70s with putting posters around the campus to see what kind of graffiti would be written on the posters. And the experiment failed dismally, because the first thing that happened was that people stole the posters and put them in their rooms. So there was a screen printing studio, poster making studio. And interestingly enough, the poster making studio saw the birth of Australia's best poster making organisation, that's called Redback Graphics, which is now based in Sydney, and it's internationally famous.
Really?
But the very first Redback posters, which you can see in the Queensland Art Gallery and in the National Gallery in Canberra, were made here on the Nathan campus.
By whom?
By an artist called Michael Callaghan, with assistance from Griffith students.
I see.
And
has Michael Callaghan gone on to be associated with it? Or?
Yes, he's still involved with it. As well as the Griffith University student involvement with those posters, there were some local high school students who were involved in one of the posters that became very well known. They were students from St Thomas More College.
Right.
So the workshop that was added after that, I believe, was a pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And the workshop that was added after that was a fabric printing workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one was a lithography workshop. And I think that was the last one to be added.
Which was the most popular, do you think?
Sorry, I forgot that there was a dark room in there as well. Which was the most popular? Probably the most popular ones were the dark room and the screen printing workshop, because those were the things that were most simply and easily and usefully accessed by Griffith University students.
Mm.
And they were also things that weren't available to the community. Whereas potteries, a lot of people are able to build a pottery under their house very simply.
Mm.
It's much more difficult to do that with those other, with photography and screen printing, because of the toxic fumes that are involved and the other technical requirements that are involved. And with the video, that was very popular as well, but we've had a problem over the years with the video, and that is the problem that everyone has with video, and that is that the technology keeps changing. So we've had to continually find the money to update the video facilities.
Yes.
And lithography has been less popular, although consistently used, but less popular because it's a minority art form.
Well, it is, and it's but it's a very, it's a very different one too, isn't it? It's, it's sort of rather rare.
Yes. The etching workshop and the lithography workshop go together as being the ones that are not used by the wider community, but are used by the arts community.
Yes.
Whereas the screen printing workshop and the dark room have been used by an incredible range of community groups and individuals who've wanted to make posters or wanted to process and print photographs.
Apart from the poster development that went on to be Australia-wide and recognised overseas, are there any others that you can recall participants who made a career out of what began virtually, I suppose, as a hobby?
Yes, well,
students particularly.
In answering that, I should go on to talk about the workshop program, which was separate from the studio program, and I mentioned before that it's become quite a large program.
Yeah.
And in that workshop program, we've had hundreds of participants each year, in addition to the 200 or 300 members who access the studios each year. And I've certainly seen a large number of people come through our workshop program, start their involvement in the arts through our workshop program, and then go on to art college and then become famous artists, including one example of that is Holly, who won the Mowat and Shandon Art Prize 2 years ago, which is Australia's richest art prize.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing her at a workshop here in 1980.
Really?
And that was, you know, certainly before she'd had any career as an artist or shown any art. Mm. And there are many examples of that kind. In terms of Griffith University students, I think some of the best examples I can think of, unfortunately, are people who were studying something else and became so interested in the arts through our workshops that they decided to do art rather than history or environmental studies.
So they opted out of their academic courses.
There have been a number of examples of that. But there's also been interesting examples. For example, we had a woman who was making posters with Michael Callaghan back in the late 1970s, who subsequently became a historian and teaches at one of the other universities now.
Not an art historian?
No, she's a historian, but she's a feminist historian, but she still makes political posters and gets the occasional commission and has her work in the Queensland Art Gallery.
Now, it was funded by the university to start off with, but you've talked about the fact that it also received outside funding. From whom?
Well, the first sponsors, in addition to the anonymous donor, were the Potter Foundation and the Meyer Foundation, and then a series of grants from boards of the Australia Council.
Potter is the...
The Ian Potter Foundation.
Ian Potter, yes.
Based in Melbourne.
Stockbreaking.
Yes, that's right. And, yes, a series of grants from the Australia Council. The first grants from the Australia Council came from the old Film, Radio and Television Board of the Australia Council and the Theatre Board. And subsequently there have been grants from virtually all boards of the Australia Council, including the Aboriginal Arts Board and the Community Arts Board and Performing Arts Board. And most of the grants have come from the Visual Arts Craft Board because the focus of activities became more and more to do with visual arts. Mm. There was also a grant in 1984 from the Utah Foundation to buy the lithography press.
I should say
that the Queensland Government has provided annual sponsorship ever since 1980.
Has it?
And it's been a substantial sponsor of the workshop program.
And it's still continuing?
Yes.
That's great.
The workshop program is actually finishing this year, and so the Queensland Government sponsorship for that program will finish this year. But the Government has given us a grant for next year for a different kind of project for a regional touring exhibition.
Oh, right, that's good. Why is the workshop program finishing?
Well, the role and function of Griffith Artworks in the university has really changed and is still changing in ways that I can't predict as a result of the growth of the university and the amalgamation of the university with the Queensland College of Art and the Queensland Conservatorium of Music and two former CAEs that teach the arts. And so the whole notion of having a small arts unit in a small one-campus university, which would provide an arts experience for the entire university, sits a bit oddly in the new university.
Yes, I see.
And in particular offering a teaching program when there are other areas of the university that should be offering such a teaching program wasn't considered to be appropriate.
No, I should have thought of that, of course.
So the idea, or what I'm hoping will happen, is that over the next few years, a combination of the short courses that are offered by the Conservatorium of Music and the College of Art and Humanities, who also offers short courses in the arts through their video program, and the short courses that are offered in the arts area at the education faculty at Mount Gravatt and some short courses that are offered at the Gold Coast will be able to be combined to form a program similar to the program that we've run over the last 13 years. But so far we haven't been able to formalise that.
No, I see. It sounds, so easy that you get receive funds from this body and that body and the other body, but I imagine it doesn't just fall like pennies from heaven. You have to do quite a lot of exploratory work, submissions, etc., etc.
Yes.
Do you do them all?
Well, it takes about 2 or 3 years between when the germ of an idea comes and when you're actually doing the project. Mm. And the... The process between the two is a process of research and networking and working out who to ask for the money and who's most likely to give it to you, and then the process of submission writing and waiting anxiously and then employing the right artists.
It means a lot of investigatory work, yes, doesn't it? Because you can't know automatically about the activities of all the different funding bodies and what they're likely to respond.
Well, it really means keeping your finger on the pulse all the time, both of what's happening in the arts community throughout Australia and what's happening in the funding bodies, and relating what's most likely to receive funds because of the policies of the arts funding bodies, and also what the arts community is wanting to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what the general community is interested in and likely to respond to. And the same sort of thing has applied to the workshop program, that we revise the workshop program every year according to what the most interesting arts ideas are over that year and what we've known from community feedback are likely to be the things that people would be interested in doing and interested in paying for.
Yes.
And you asked me whether I do the submissions myself. Up until quite recently, I did most of them myself, and there are now 5 staff members at Griffith Artworks, so I get help.
All right, that's great. In 1979, Griffith Artworks was established, and in 1990, it became an allied centre in the Faculty of Humanities. It became distinct from the Film and Drama Centre, which had developed into the School of Film and Media. Is this right? Am I saying?
Well, that's correctly. Yeah, that's not quite the way it happened. The School of Film and Media developed as a separate activity within the Faculty of Humanities. So the fact that there had been this other organisation called the Film and Drama Centre, which changed its name at that time, was really a coincidence, rather than a development from one to the other.
I see.
The reason for the name change, as I said earlier, was that it was felt that this organisation was now doing a lot of other things as well as film and drama, and it was really awkward trying to explain to people every time you said the name what it did.
Yes.
And so a number of people got together and came up with that new name, which I remember being appalled by when I heard about it. I was on maternity leave and I was at the Adelaide Festival and someone rang me and said, "This is going to be the new name." And I said, "That's dreadful, I hate it."
And what was it?
Griffith Artworks.
Griffith Artworks.
Yes.
I see.
And it sounded like a factory to me. And they said, well, that's what they wanted it to sound
do
like.
Do all the framing and et cetera, that sort of thing.
And indeed, someone said to me just the other day that he felt that the name indicated a graphic studio or something, a production studio, and it was misleading and we should change it. And I said, I'm not going to change it again. We've spent years developing a profile for the organisation with this name.
And when did you become the head of Griffith Artworks?
Well, I was the only staff member of the Queensland Film and Drama Centre, and then the head of the unit that had its name changed to Griffith Artworks. Mm-hmm. And that name change happened in 1987, so that was when I became director of Griffith Artworks.
I see. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the work that you... What is the work that you now undertake... And did it differ from your previous responsibilities?
In 1986, when we got a new Vice-Chancellor, Roy Webb, he came to the university and wondered what this old organisation was and whether it was really right for the university to be spending its recurrent funds from the federal government on such an operation. And so he requested that there be a review of the then Queensland Film and Drama Centre. And the result of that review was a recommendation that a number of the then separate arts activities that were happening in the university, that was a concerts program that was being run out of the library, organised by the then librarian, Sid Page, and the art collection and the activities that relate to the art collection should all be combined into one unit, and that unit would be the Queensland Film and Drama Centre, now Griffith Artworks. So at that time, 1986 or late 1986 and beginning of 1987, the previous activities of Griffith Artworks, which were the studios and the workshops and residencies and a community arts program, which I haven't told you about yet, had added to them the university's concerts program and the art collection. Can I tell you about the community arts program now? In the mid-1980s, community arts as a concept was blossoming in Australia, and there were community arts offices employed by local government authorities in many parts of Australia. And Queensland hadn't done very well in that area. The Brisbane City Council had had a community arts officer briefly, and that hadn't worked very well, so they didn't want to have another one. They now have five community arts officers. And likewise, Ipswich had tried and hadn't worked very well. And there was also a music development officer, a similar kind of position in Albertshire. And the Community Arts Board of the Australia Council approached me because they knew my work in the arts and asked whether the university would be interested in sponsoring a community arts officer here at the university. And this was very unusual. There'd never been a community arts officer in a university. And the understanding would be that that officer wouldn't be working on community arts within the university solely, but would be working on arts projects in the wider community. And John Willett was very interested in the concept because it related very well to his ideas of how the university might be a centre for the arts for the wider community. So we had funding for a three-year period to establish a community arts officer position, and that was funding from the federal government and the state government and shared in a three-way arrangement with the university. And during those years there were arts projects done mostly in communities that were considered to be isolated or underprivileged in one way or another, and so the arts projects were mostly in Logan City and in Inala, although there were a number of other projects that took place for, as well. There was one in a local prison, and there were a number of community arts officers who worked here during that time and worked in the Queensland Film and Drama Centre.
I see. I was going to ask, who selected the first one, the community arts officer? Was he or she supplied to you? Or?
No, we advertised for the position and we interviewed in the same way we do with any staff position.
And he did many apply?
Yes, they did, yes. And he then went on to greater things. He's now head of the arts in the ACT.
Really? What's his name?
John Stanwell. And when he left, we advertised again and we had a second person that we interviewed for. And unfortunately, when it came the time for the university to take over the salary altogether, the university decided against it. That was when the economic times were starting to turn down, and it was seen as not something the university could really put its money into.
Why is the Artist in Residence program reputed, the one at Griffith, reputed to be one of the best in Australia?
Well, yes, I've been caught for that one before when we were being interviewed by the Quality Committee a couple of months ago. They said, prove it!
Well, I'm not going to say prove it. But
and I said that the statement hadn't been made by me, it had been made by the funding bodies who give out these grants.
Well, that's an even a much better argument, isn't
it? Yes, but I understand that the reason that's been said about the program relates to its longevity, the number of residencies that have taken place here, the innovative nature of the residencies. A lot of the residencies have been in working in areas that were quite new and unusual for their time, or working across a number of different art forms. The first couple of residencies, as I said, were in theatre and video, and the third residency was in conceptual art, and that was back in the 70s. So they were certainly seen as innovative. The other things that I think have helped it to help to make it a very high quality and well-known residency program have been the fact that the university has dedicated studio space to the artists, which doesn't often happen in residencies, mm-hmm. and they've been very good studio spaces, and they've been in beautiful environments surrounded by the bush.
Mm.
And the university's also dedicated staff time to coordinate residencies and to make sure that the artists in residence really do have an involvement with the community. And we've also, unlike some residency programs, we've gone out of our way to select artists who have some kind of history of community involvement. So it's very different from just putting an artist in a studio and peeping at them through a hole. You really have to have artists who are able to be articulate and who welcome people
yes.
coming and asking them about their work.
Oh.
So I think it's really the community involvement with our residency program has been one of the real pluses, and there have been some wonderful residencies where we've had artists, one of the ones that I remember best involved an artist working with a range of other artists in a local brickworks down at Browns Plains, making very large ceramic sculptures that are too large for a normal kiln and require a brickwork size kiln.
Yeah.
And that involved the workers in the brickworks who'd only really ever made bricks before then with their clay. Starting to make sculptures and pots as well.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, then, were the quality people persuaded by your...
They seemed to be quite happy. They asked for a supplementary submission, giving them details, and we provided that.
So, good.
Yeah.
Splendid. Are you now the curator of the Griffith Artworks, of the Griffith Art Collection?
No, I'm pleased to say that we actually have a curator of the Griffith
really?
University Art Collection. I'm the director of the collection, and as of this year we have a full-time curator, and we also have a curatorial assistant.
Who's the curator?
The curator is a woman named Beth Jackson, and she's a graduate in fine arts from the University of Queensland.
Uh-huh.
And the curatorial assistant is a graduate from the Queensland College of Art.
Oh,
so
great.
We have one who's doing the theoretical work and the other one who does the technical work.
Yes.
And of course there are casual people who help with hanging the exhibitions, because we've really got, at any one time, we've got 30 to 40 exhibitions that are moving around the campuses, moving around the gallery areas. And so developing those exhibitions and moving them and changing them and maintaining the work and buying new work is a very big job.
Yes. And the curator organises the exhibitions
yes.
in collaboration with you, I suppose.
Yes. What we try to do is to provide exhibitions that are in some way relevant to the teaching work that's taking place, the teaching and research work that's taking place in the area where the exhibition is hung. Now, of course, that's not always possible, and some of the exhibitions are more general interest exhibitions. But we also try and provide educational support material with those exhibitions. So we put didactic panels up on the walls to explain what the exhibition is about and how the works relate to each other. So they're not just displays of art.
No. Oh, incidentally, just to go back to the brickworks, did the giant sculptures that were made there, did what happened to them?
One of them is in the National Gallery in Canberra.
Really?
Yes. Some of them, I've got one of them in my backyard, in my garden.
Goodness.
They've gone into private collections, most of them.
Oh,
but I do know that one of them went into a public collection.
That's great. Mm. Now... How many works of art are in the collection?
There's about 1,500 items in the collection at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we add... We bought about 100 works last year. Generally, we add about 30 to 50 works each year, so that's the rate at which the collection grows. Last year, we had a number of donations, including one quite large donation of items to the collection, which boosted the number that we acquired.
Oh, that's good. And what are the different categories included?
Well, the main basis of the collection is works on paper. And the reason the collection was established as a works on paper collection, and that was established again by a policy that Val Presley was responsible for writing in the mid-70s, the primary reasons for that were economics, and the idea that if there was going to be a small amount of money, we should make that money spread as far as possible, and so works on paper are cheaper than canvases and large sculptures. But it was also seen that there weren't too many people in Australia, galleries or museums, specialising in works on paper, and so that it would be possible within a period of time to establish an interesting, unique and representative collection of a particular type at the university. So that's what they aimed for. The other thing that's important to say is that it's an Australian art collection, and it's a contemporary Australian art collection, and it's generally, the university doesn't buy works that were made earlier than the life of the university. So the collection commenced in the early 70s with work that was made in the early 70s. And we continue, by and large, to buy works in any one year that were made around about that year.
And they're all on paper?
Well, the primary focus of the collection is works on paper. About 10 years ago, the committee that develops this policy decided to extend works on paper to include photographs. And there are also a secondary focus in the collection, which is for a number of large site-specific works, such as sculptures that are commissioned to go in a particular place. And there have also been a number of purchases of large works on canvas that have been bought for specific sites. For example, there was a big painting that was bought in the early days to go in the council chamber. It is no longer in the council chamber, and we rarely buy big paintings these days.
I think I remember the
reviews. It was a Keith Luby painting that won the Blake Prize. It was a religious painting.
What about the works on paper? What's the life expectancy of these? I mean, do they have to have special care, or do
Yes, works on paper in a regular public collection like an art museum would normally only be shown for a couple of months in very low light levels, and then they'd be rested for a number of years in the dark and in humidity and temperature controlled conditions. Of course, we don't have any of that here. We have often natural light, and we don't have good storage facilities, and we certainly don't have enough storage facilities or indeed enough art to be taking the art on and off the walls. This absolutely horrifies a lot of people, and it's been the subject of heated debate on our committees over the years. Some people taking the view that we should just assume that the collection will gradually die, fade out, and that we shouldn't see it as a historical document that we should try and preserve, and others see the collection as something that reflects the life of the university, in particular that it's been collected each year as contemporary work during the same years that the university has developed, and also given that the art policy, the collection policy, relates the purchasing to the university's mission statement and to particular areas of debate in the university's study. So, yes, it's really an issue that's never been resolved to this day. But I can say that our works are on the walls most of the time. Most of the work is on the wall most of the time. And this is presenting us with some very expensive conservation problems. If we want to conserve the collection, I had a quote done earlier this year on what it would cost to deal with some of the immediate problems that the collection is starting to exhibit. And these are problems that relate to largely to mould and to fading and to insect infestation. And the quote to work on it over a 10-year period was $200,000, in excess of $200,000. And the collection itself was valued at the same time as $1.2 million. But the university has not so far allocated monies to conserve the collection, or monies to store the collection in environmentally controlled conditions. And the storerooms that we have are worse than inadequate.
I was going to say, I suppose you thought of seeing if the National Gallery, the Art Gallery, Queensland Art Gallery, can do something about storing for you?
Yes, they've got their own storage problems.
They have.
Yes. What they've done is that Doug Hall has come on our committee and jumped up and down and said that this is dreadful, and that Griffith is probably the only institution in Australia that holds a major and important collection and doesn't look after it properly.
Yes, well, something will have to be done about it, won't
it? Yes, yes. I don't think that this problem is unique in Australia. I think that there are many universities that have got themselves into similar difficulties by someone thinking years ago, wouldn't it be nice to have an art collection, and allocating money for buying, but not allocating any money for looking after, and not thinking about the long-term ramifications of storage.
Mm. Yes. Well, I was going to ask, where is the collection? But you tell me it's all over, and it moves around all the campuses.
Can I just be a bit more specific about where it is?
Yes.
In the early 1980s, the university was required to formally designate public spaces and designate those as works of art gallery areas, or what we call designated.
Required by whom?
It was required by the Taxation Department and the Australia Council, if it wished to be eligible for Australia Council funds and for donations under the federal government's Taxation Incentive Scheme for the Arts, then it had to prove it was an art gallery.
Yes,
and the way to prove it was an art gallery was to formally and officially designate spaces which would be set aside as gallery spaces, and they had to be public spaces. So for that reason, our art collection, unlike some university collections, is not displayed in people's private offices. All of the work is displayed in public areas, with one exception, and that's the Vice Chancellor's suite.
Mm-hmm.
And he has argued that his suite is sufficiently public, that it should be allowed to have works of art in it. And so people can come onto the campus, and this is one of the great advantages of a collection like ours, that it's available to be viewed by the general public in normal university hours, which is from 8:30 in the morning till 8:30 at night,
mm-hmm.
and often on weekends as well, by anyone who cares to come.
Mm.
And there are designated gallery spaces on most of the campuses, although not all the campuses, and most of them, of course, are still on the Nathan campus, although there are very substantial gallery spaces on the Malcravat campus.
Yes. Then are people actually, the members of the public, actually invited to come in? Do they know that?
Well, we publicise the collection as much as is possible. We had a very good review of an exhibition from the collection in the Courier Mail last month, and it is very difficult to publicise a collection like this in the arts pages of the newspapers, but we put advertisements in the Art Almanac. Mm-hmm. And we run little columns in the exhibition sections of the community announcements in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I go on the radio from time to time and on television when I can, talking about the collection.
Mm. Oh, that's fine. Do other universities have art collections?
Yes, I'm not sure whether all universities have art collections, but most, particularly these days as a result of amalgamations, most would have some kind of art collection.
Mm. I recall that the Brisbane College of Advanced Education, well, not the college as a whole perhaps, but particularly the Kelvin Grove section of it, which was originally the Kelvin Grove Teachers College and then Kelvin Grove CAE, had a very good art collection, because I think mainly because Peter Botsman was so interested in it.
Well, interestingly enough, some of that collection is now ours.
Oh, is it really?
When we amalgamated with the Mount Gravatt College, which was part of BCAE, there was a heads of agreement that involved a percentage of assets that would come to Griffith University.
Oh, yes, I remember.
The percentage was something like 28.3% mm-hmm. would come to Griffith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a very interesting time with the curator of the BCAE art collection, going through their collection, wondering whether 28.3% meant numbers of works or value. And we I'm pleased to say, arranged it very amicably. We looked at his collection policy and our collection policy, and we tried to take things that would complement ours while not damaging theirs.
Oh, so that's pretty good. And now the QUT has reaped the benefit of the remainder.
Yes.
I don't imagine QUT had a collection themselves.
I think they had a very, very tiny collection that wasn't really a collection. It was just a group of works which would have included official portraits.
Yes.
I should go back at that point to say that I didn't really finish telling you what was in the art collection.
Mm. Oh, no.
I'm reminded by when I mentioned official portraits that we have a number of sub-collections of the art collection. One of them is a collection that we call the main collection, and that consists of contemporary Australian works which have been acquired according to a formal policy. And we have a very lengthy policy document that's been developed by a committee over a number of years, and it is ratified formally every 3 years, each triennium, by the council. And works that have come into the possession of the university via various means which don't fall under the acquisition criteria become part of what we call the reserve collection, and that includes donations that don't fall into the main category and official portraits. And there are all sorts of wild and wonderful things in the reserve collection, including medals and helmets and various gifts that have been received by the Vice-Chancellor and some other sections of the university. And we also have, as a sub-collection of the main collection, a poster collection, which really stems from the separate history of Griffith Artworks, the Film and Drama Centre, with that poster workshop that I mentioned that was established in 1979. And during those years before the Griffith Artworks became responsible for the art collection, the Queensland Film and Drama Centre had developed its own poster archive of both posters that were made in the university and posters that were made throughout Australia. And so when the two were joined, the Arts Committee looked at the poster collection and went through that and formally accepted a range of those posters which are considered of high enough quality into the art collection, but kept it as a separate sub-collection just to to indicate the historical difference.
They too, I suppose, are suffering from the passage of time.
They are, although they haven't been permanently displayed the way the rest of the collection has. We've managed to rotate those more because those really are far more fragile.
Yes.
Because they're usually made on very cheap paper, whereas the works
They're framed.
Yeah, some of them
under glass.
Yes. Yeah. Most of our work these days is framed under perspex, not glass, and the reason for that is that perspex, it's possible with perspex to more cheaply provide a very substantial filter against UV light. You can provide 98% UV filter, and it also means that given that we rotate our works, it's easier in terms of transport, and when we send works on tour, we're less likely to have
breakages.
And breakages, if a work of art falls off the wall, for example, and it's framed in glass, it's possible for a work on paper to be slashed by the broken glass.
Of course it is. Oh, that's interesting. Do you and the committee see the need for a permanent home where the collection can be shown, can be art shown?
Yes. In
a word.
In 1990, the council received a document from the committee, which I had written arguing that the collection desperately needed storage and that that storage should be seen as the basis for a gallery, and the council allocated $500,000 towards a gallery beginning with storage, and that money has grown through various donations and additional allocations from within the university to being closer to $1 million.
Okay.
And I'm agitating in the university to have that commenced, although that process has been slowed down for the same reasons that Griffith Artworks is changing its function, and that is that we now have a College of Art and it needs a building. And we have a Conservatorium of Music and it needs a building. So providing for the art collection has been put on the back burner.
it is still necessary to have a separate gallery, a Griffith Gallery. You wouldn't think of combining with the College of Art.
I don't think it is necessary to have a separate gallery. I think it would be very nice to have a gallery on the Nathan campus so that people on this campus and visitors to this campus would be able to see more focused exhibitions from the collection than are possible in the corridor areas.
Mm.
But I'm not so wedded to the idea that I'll die for it. Mm. What I am certainly wedded to is the notion that there have to be adequate storage facilities provided on some campus, and preferably the biggest campus, which would be this one, so that the works can be properly rested and properly conserved.
Would the $1 million, or close to $1 million, provide the storage facilities? I see. So that could be, you could go ahead with that and have the storage facilities, and then maybe the collection variously displayed either in here or in at the College of Art, new building, wherever
that's
it may
right.
be.
That's right. And ideally, it would be nice to have a dedicated gallery area that's more than just corridors on every campus, so that we can showcase our collection for the communities that go to each of those campuses.
Mm.
And we're aiming for something like that, even if some of those gallery spaces may be quite small, like our Central Theatres Gallery on the Nathan campus.
Mm.
I'm also interested in a concept that's being introduced in museums overseas, what's called accessible storage, where you design some of the storage area so that the public can come and look at mini exhibitions in the storage area.
Mm. Well, that sounds pretty good.
And that, in a sense, it demystifies what goes on behind the scenes
as
well.
Yes,
which I find very attractive, because most of the things that we do, we try to do to educate people in not being frightened of the arts.
Mm. Oh, thank you very much indeed. Is there anything else that you feel you'd like to tell me about?
There's probably a million things that I've left out. I think that'll do.
I've found particularly interesting, because there are many things that you've been telling me that I didn't know about, and there are other things that you've reminded me of. So it's been a sort of little journey back through the years, as far as I'm concerned. Well, thank you very much indeed, Dr. Bonin. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and in due course this will be part of the history of Griffith.
Thank you, Patience, and congratulations on doing all this work. Wonderful.